Welcome on into the 9 o'clock hour. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you till 10 o'clock each and every weeknight here on 92.9 The Game. Been so busy talking Falcons, and then we had the breaking Garth Lagerwey news. If you missed that, unfortunately, Garth needs to once again step away from Atlanta United to focus on his health. And we wish him nothing but the best as they continue to search for the next manager of the Five Stripes. But we didn't talk any college ball, so let's fix that now. Head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy Joe DeLeon of A to Z Sports. Joe, before we get to Georgia and Georgia Tech here, level of surprise with the Napier firing, and who, in your opinion, are the logical candidates?
Well, there's obviously no surprise that Napier was fired. It was almost to this point where I feel like it was understood nationally that there was just no direction for them to go to. It seemed like that the way that everything had transpired this year, that it was just, he was doomed. There was no path forward. I ultimately think that the best possible solution for them is to go to Lane Kiffin. Out of any of the available options to them, there is no better personality hire that fits best with what they need, the type of vocal and confident leader that he is, and then more importantly, with his roster development skills. And then on top of all this, you have all this offensive talent on the team with DJ Lagway and Dallas Wilson and Jaden Ball. I think those guys would be excited to stay if they knew that someone as gifted as Lane Kiffin was going to be orchestrating the offense next year so they could get started off on the right foot. Outside of that, though, I really like the idea of Eli Drinkwitz or Alex Golesh of USF. Drinkwitz at Mizzou has turned that team into a consistent winner and has outperformed typical expectations for that team. So I think he would fit nicely for Florida and turn them into a far more consistent program than they've been.
Okay, so let's get to the nitty-gritty here. You mentioned Lane Kiffin and his squad. Georgia takes care of business at home, but it was a thriller, 43-35. Gunnar Stockton has a huge game. But my question to you is, what's the level of concern about Georgia's defense? They've gotten into a few more shootouts than I think they would like.
Yeah, I think that right now the obvious issue is the pass rush. They're not getting any sack reduction is really, really troubling. And the fact that some of their sack production has to come off of pressures from C.J. Allen and other places that are not their defensive line, I feel like it's too late in the season to be sitting here saying it's got to get fixed. Because if you can't find a solution with week nine around the corner, where are you suddenly going to manufacture that pass rush? I almost think it's one of these worlds where they just have to live with it, and the secondary needs to make the plays that they did against Ole Miss where they were breaking up tight, contested catches the way that they did. They're just going to need to live with that. They're going to need to live with, and I know this is troubling for Georgia fans here, but a lot of high-scoring games and hoping your secondary makes those plays. I think what absolutely helps, though, is that you've got a tremendous quarterback. I have been really advocating for Gunnar Stockton because I feel like he has been so undervalued in the college football landscape. I feel like every time I praise him, I'm met with college football fans are saying, like, why are you giving him so much love? He's not that good. I call total, BS to that. I think that he is so gritty. He's willing to put his body on the line. He's willing to fight through contact. And he's also got great instincts. And he sets up his guys to win and to make plays. I think that having Stockton with the running game humming the way that it is, this Georgia team can get to a college football playoff. It's just and maybe even win multiple games. It's just going to be real stressful because they're never going to win a game confidently because their defense isn't going to get the stops.
Tech here remains undefeated. Duke was a slight favorite at home. I don't really understand why. I know Mensah played well in the game, and he's played well this season, but I'd pillar to post Georgia Tech. I just think overall the roster and the coaching is just much better. But nevertheless, they win comfortably 27-18. Are you concerned at all with the rest of their schedule? I feel like until you get to Georgia, we've been talking about this periodically all season, Joe, there's no reason for me to think they can't run the table right now.
And they can run the table. I don't think that they're going to beat Georgia. And I know that last year they gave Georgia some fits and they challenged them. I think it's going to probably be very high scoring, but the one separation there is I just think that the Georgia offense would just out-edge, outlast enough the Georgia Tech offense. But we'll see what transpires over the next couple of weeks. Plenty of things can change. As we see, everything changes every single week. But this Georgia Tech team, man, I didn't really get it either when you said that they weren't favored. It made no sense to me. I really thought that that was just some random bubbling buzz for Duke because they had a couple of good games. Meanwhile, we've seen Georgia Tech be the steadiest team, one of the steadiest teams in college football. They're just finding ways to win even when they're not playing their best, and they're so fundamentally sound. Their remaining schedule, at least in ACC play, is so advantageous for them to get to the college or to get to college football playoff and get to the ACC championship game. I don't see a stop where they're going to get knocked off because they're just not one of those teams that is ill-prepared, that is not focused. The one thing, and I know this is something that we talked about already, is what the injuries at quarterback look like with Haynes King, who's occasionally had issues with him being available and in the lineup. That's the only thing that I really would think that would derail them once the end of the season came around and they faced off with Georgia and they play in the ACC championship game and then go to a college football playoff.
Speaking of the ACC, I'm not surprised Louisville went into Miami and won because I kind of thought that was going to happen, honestly. But are you surprised, as I was, with the way that Carson Beck played?
I am. And I think that this was the biggest part with me for Miami that I was really disappointed in, is because I kept talking about how they were the most balanced team in college football. And part of that balance and what that whole narrative was about was how whenever one thing wasn't working, they found success in a new area. There were games this year where, and the Florida State game was the best example of this, where the run game didn't show up, and that's the most important part of their success. And they were able to win because Carson Beck played great, and Malachi Toney was dynamic, CJ Daniels was dynamic. But the problem was that in this Louisville game, Beck regressed. He took two steps backward. He looked like the version of himself against Texas last year. It seemed like the minute that they came out flat, this was a team that hadn't come out flat all year long, the minute that they came out flat, they were not equipped to chase and to fight their way to get back into a game quickly because Beck immediately reverted back to his belief of, I got to be Superman, I got to do everything, I got to put myself on the line, I got to take these shots. I also think part of this, too, is I don't believe that his elbow is really as effectively recovered as I think everybody thought that it was. I don't know. I'm no doctor. But the two of his interceptions that he threw were just fluttering balls that did not have a lot of zip on them. The one to Toney was a good example of that, where it was like a punt that was thrown up there for one of the DBs on Louisville to come down with it. But I think they're going to be fine. I think they're going to recover. And I think we've seen in college football that sometimes adversity is all you need to bounce back and to walk back in.
Does the loss to Vanderbilt put Brian Kelly on the hot seat?
I don't know if it puts him truly on the hot seat, but this weekend does. You're at home, and this is frankly a no-win situation because Texas A&M is incredibly hot. You're at home in a setting which is one of the hardest to win in college football, being Baton Rouge. If you can't win this game, you are absolutely going to get some serious pressure on you. You're going to have a lot of boosters and a lot of fans, from what I'm hearing, that are already frustrated, be 10 times more frustrated after the way that he moved this offseason with this push that they needed to go all in. They needed more from the fan base. They needed more money. They needed more NIL, everybody to commit more and they can reach their goals. And they're falling extremely, extremely short of that. I don't know what happens here. I don't know if it's a circumstance where maybe he decides he doesn't want to be a part of this and he goes to a different job. Who knows? But right now, it does not look like success is going to be found for LSU with Brian Kelly.
When you look at the Heisman race, it's as confusing and wide open as I've ever seen it, Joe. Fernando Mendoza comes to mind. Who are your three or four guys right now that you have at the top?
Yeah, this year we don't really have anyone that's like truly statistically like gaudy and insanely dominant that we have to go, oh my God, that guy's it. Ashton Gentry was the guy last year who was leading up until the point where Travis Hunter ended up pulling it off. This year for me, you mentioned Mendoza, makes a lot of sense, but I've got three guys that I think will also be in the mix at the end of the year. Gunnar Stockton, who I just mentioned, if they continue to win and he's putting up four or five touchdowns a game, he will have the stats, and they will be probably in the mix for the SEC championship game, which will make a case for him very strong. I think that Ty Simpson makes the most obvious sense with the way that he's played and these big games that he's had. He's been the driving force for Alabama's recent success. He would be a no-brainer for me because the minute that he turned it on, the minute was the minute that the Crimson Tide just really, really changed their energy, their vibe, how they went about things. And then last, I think more people need to talk about Jeremiah Love. I think that Jeremiah Love's performance against USC was his Heisman moment where the case was going to be made for him. Now, the one thing that's a little tough for him is that he shares a lot of carries with Jadarian Price, and this was one of those games where he didn't get a lot of touches, but he still went over 200 yards on the ground, and he had multiple touchdowns. I think from an all-purpose perspective, his stats will be the best among running backs in college football, and he'll be the driving force for Notre Dame's success this year. So I think that he deserves to be in the mix. Any of those four guys make a lot of sense, but it wouldn't shock me, as you just said, there is as wide open as possible if somebody just snuck their way in out of nowhere and ended up winning the award.
Speaking of no-brainers, is it a no-brainer that we see Arch Manning next season back in college?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do not believe that he's going to declare. He has not shown that he is a first-round caliber guy. And, I mean, heck, do we even know for certain if he's going to declare after 2027? I mean, he's been around college football for a very, very long time. But for, you know, us to assume that he would declare as a redshirt junior, who knows? But I think that with Arch Manning, the thing with him is that he just needs a lot more time to learn the game and to stay more composed. And he also needs a better situation around him for him to more properly develop. Their offensive line play has been atrocious. They have not found success running the football. And all of those things, I think, have really contributed to him having such a poor, poor season. But, yeah, he's definitely not going to declare in 2026.
How surprised were you that Texas Tech got knocked off?
I was very surprised, but it's also one of those teams that I really don't think that anyone should be panicking about because they were stepping into this game with Will Hammond, their backup, playing Bear Morton out. Will Hammond had a tremendous second half against Utah, and the problem was he did this last year where he stepped up, had some great play, and then he really, really cooled down very, very quickly. He's a talented player that I think in the future is going to help this Texas Tech squad do some tremendous things, but the current moment they need Morton. And I think once Morton comes back and he's healthy, which is kind of a hard thing to buy in on because of his overall health history has been very up and down, even in this season. Him being back takes this Texas Tech team back to their level of explosiveness. They were not able to generate big plays at the same rate that they were able to do so prior to the Arizona State game when Hammond was in. So I think they're going to be fine, but it was a little bit shocking because I thought that they were going to be able to take care of a banged-up Sam Levitt and a Arizona State defense that was frankly struggling.
Before I let you go, Joe, trust me, I know it's hard to pass up $90 million. And I don't think I would, and I don't think you would either. But are you any bit surprised that Cignetti didn't try to get to a bigger fish?
No, I'm not surprised because for multiple reasons. One, he's a much older coach, and resetting and restarting somewhere else, I don't know if it really makes sense. You have the chance to build something, and you've got a commitment from a perfect situation. You're at a school that has normally low expectations of success. They do not expect you to get to the college football playoff. They just expect you to have a winning record, and then they're happy. But I think Cignetti can accomplish more than that. You have more of a buffer if you theoretically did go 8-4 one year or 9-3 and didn't get to the playoff. And at the same time, when you do get this team in the playoff and you end up playing this as impactfully as you are this season, where they are very obviously one of the best teams in college football, you are blowing the minds of Indiana fans that have not seen good football. The best part about all of this is I don't think people realize the financial commitment NIL-wise to his contract, to resources that Indiana gets. They are the best example in modern athletics, modern college sports, what can be accomplished when you're a program that has a rich alumni base, a deep alumni base, but wasn't historically a good team. I think Indiana is going to continue to rise. And having squared off with Cignetti when I was in college, when I was at the University of Rhode Island, and he used to knock the heck out of us when we played against him, I am not surprised that he is sticking to what has been working and trying to build something there in Indiana.
Joe, great stuff as always. We'll chat soon. We'll check you out at A to Z Sports. Appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right. That is our good buddy there, Joe DeLeon, breaking down all things college ball. When we get back, let's shift back to the Falcons. What happened to Ray McLeod? Ooh, We'll talk to Joe Patrick with the latest from Flowery Branch next. All right, without any further ado, let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our Falcons insider, Joe Patrick. Make sure you check out the Joe Patrick on Football podcast. All right, Joe, before we can even get to what happened on Sunday Night Football, a couple of off-the-field notes that we need to hit. Number one, to the best of your knowledge, what happened with Ray McCloud?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's kind of interesting because, like, my theory that, you know, this was connected to Ike Hilliard, and not that it necessarily produced some kind of explosive kind of confrontation between him, Ray and Raheem Morris or anyone on the coaching staff. I never, like, thought that maybe that occurred, but just that he was so disappointed by Ike Hilliard leaving, who the week after, in media, the week after Hilliard was fired, Ray McCloud called him the best coach I've ever had, said that, you know, his firing was evidence of, like, no loyalty in the league. And so that, to me, signaled, okay, well, maybe he's, like, down and it's affecting his practice, performances, and other players are playing better than him. And now that he's been straight up released, sent home first and now released, maybe it does seem like there was something more kind of acute happening there than even I considered. But I honestly don't know. All we know is that it was, we have to get more from Raheem Morris after this has happened when we speak to him tomorrow. Until now, he's basically kind of played it coy. But it certainly seems like there was some real, what's the word? Just like a friction that was not going to be able to be overcome with him. And it's tough now because you spent entire training camp, and obviously last year when he had his breakout year as a receiver, but you spent so much time with him, like, really ingrained as this wide receiver three, and now you're trying to work, you know, Casey Washington, David Sills, like any number of other players into that position on top of, you know, maybe you go out and have to trade for somebody because it's such a loss at this time. So we'll see.
Michael Penix Jr.'s injury, what do we know? Well, let me put it this way. What do we know about it and what don't we know about it?
Yeah, we know that it's not, like, super serious, but Raheem Morris called him day-to-day, and it's a bone bruise. A bone bruise is an interesting one because it can be caused by, you know, a number of different things. I don't want to kind of speculate too much on what it was. There was a report today that came out, and I can't remember. I know Mike Bell elaborated on a reporting saying that they do expect him to play this weekend, which is good. It looked to me like he got rolled up on and maybe like he tweaked something toward the end of that game. And you could see he was grimacing. He was in pain. Raheem Morris had called Kirk Cousins over to stand next to him, chin strap buckled, ready to go in the game on a moment's notice. Ultimately, Penix does stay in that game, but none of the throws looked good while he was in there. So it was clearly affecting him. And we'll see if he's able to practice this week or how much he's able to practice again. If Mike Bell reports that he's expected to play, then I would expect him to participate in practice to some extent. But, every practice snap that he doesn't take is a big loss for a young quarterback who's, again, trying to get ready and trying to bounce back after a rough offensive performance, not just for himself, but for the whole offense this week. I think it's important that this team bounces back strongly against a weakened Miami Dolphins team.
Is this team just inconsistent, or was this loss matchup dependent?
No, I mean, I think they're inconsistent, and I think that, you know, when you look specifically at where the downturns have come for this team, you look at the road games, you know, and they just have not performed on the road offensively like they've been, like they have at home. And I think that there's, you know, I don't think that it's necessarily down to, like, you know, crowd noise or anything like that. Like, obviously they were playing in Carolina when they got smoked and didn't do anything offensively, and then it's not like a hostile environment that's affecting them. I don't know what it is with regards to playing on the road, but we're going to ask about that this week. But also, you know, it's just like when you look at just, some of the play calling, you know, there's big kind of question marks around there. And I think, Chris, the other thing is I think you're always going to feel like an inconsistent football team when you don't have a kicker
and a kicker that you believe in, I should say. Obviously, this team has Parker Romo, but just evidenced by the fact that Raheem Morris was not willing to call on him to kick a 53-yarder to potentially tie that game, like you definitely would if you trusted your kicker, then I think that that is always going to throw volatility into the game. And then also, their red zone offense, or even inside the 30s, let's say, is just, it's inconsistent. And that's why we're seeing this team not able to score points and capitalize when they're able to pick up yards between the 20s. And so when that happens, you're just going to be, the results are going to be inconsistent. And it's extremely worrying that this team only scored 10 points and really, honestly, didn't, like, I know the yardage kind of was there somewhat by the end of this game, but you pick up 57 yards on two passes toward the end of the first half that puts you in position to score, although they didn't do that. There were some, I just saw inflated numbers that really kind of like underscore or that overrepresented how effective this offense was against a really beleaguered San Francisco 49er defense in that game. And Craig Robert Sala, he kind of like drew up a bunch of designer blitzes and stuff that fooled the Falcons, and they beat them up front as well, and that's not good. But ultimately, the Falcons team has to be better and has to be more effective. And to your point, be more consistent week to week.
Talking all things Dirty Birds with our insider, Joe Patrick. Make sure you check out Joe Patrick on Football for his takes on the Falcons. We've been praising Elijah Wilkinson. He stepped in. He's done an admirable job. But unfortunately, on Sunday night, he got absolutely boat raced by Bryce Huff for the entire game, even when they sent over help. Is there now long-term concern there?
I think you have to kind of, I don't know if like reevaluate, and I don't know if, they're not going to make any sort of drastic change, I don't think, this week, assuming Storm Norton is not able to play, which, by the way, Raheem Morris did not have any kind of news to report on the Storm Norton and Troy Anderson front. I know that's a question I'm getting a lot in my personal life from friends being like, where are these guys? He said they're both kind of close, but they're not quite ready to return. So we do expect Elijah Wilkinson. I would expect him to be back out there. I think that obviously after a game like that, if you're Zach Robinson, you've got to have more of a focus on helping him with chips and stuff like that. And I would certainly expect that. But, Chris, to your point about him just getting beaten, I think that that was the worry, especially with, that left-handed quarterback. And there was at least one case where I believe Michael Penix fumbled the football, where he just gets truly blindsided and Elijah Wilkinson is not even able to get a hand on Bryce Huff, and really rough, because those hits, not only are they costly within the game in terms of you lose yardage on a sack, you potentially like lose a fumble, but also those are the kinds of hits that get your quarterback hurt, and that's not something that the Falcons can really afford or really want to happen with a young quarterback, obviously. And so that's going to be a big point of emphasis for them this week. But I would just say also, Chris, along that offensive front, when I was looking at some of the tape, I just feel like there was some poor communication this week in terms of guys not properly kind of handing off rushers and twisters to the other guy, and they're not kind of being that connection between those offensive linemen. You can see when it's working well, it kind of results in like every lineman kind of has one guy that they're blocking. And in this one, you would see times where you got two linemen blocking one guy, and then somebody kind of running through from the second level, like a blitzing linebacker or something. And that offensive line's got to get that sorted out. I'll say Chris Lindstrom is always kind of saying that, and I think that we saw why he says that all the time, that communication is so important, and they need to get that straightened out this week.
Divine Diablo, obviously a huge loss. No timetable on his return, correct?
That is correct. Raheem Morris told him week to week, and if you've got a fracture, I know that there's been other guys who have had broken arms like this, and it can be like 4 weeks. I think it's as soon as 4 weeks. Kind of interesting that the team has not put him on injured reserve yet, as far as I can tell. So maybe they're holding out hope. And if they don't, there's not necessarily a need to put him on injured reserve right now. If they feel like it's questionable, they can always kind of retroactively do that if they need to. But I would say he's going to be out at least a few weeks. That would be my guess. And Raheem Morris said he's going to be week to week, and then we hope to get him back before, or we look forward to getting him back before the end of the regular season. So that kind of phrasing makes it seem like more long term than 4 weeks, but honestly, we just don't know much at this point. Maybe we get more update tomorrow.
Joe, before I let you go, Atlanta United sacks Ronnie Dial after just one season as the manager. What did you make of that decision, and how quickly can they rebound?
Yeah, it had to happen. I mean, you can't bring a coach back who, has, the worst record in club history. So, it had to happen. I think that's good news for Atlanta United and for fans to look forward to. There's at least one intriguing coach on the market, Tata Martino, who has experience with this club. Obviously, it's just purely speculation at this point as to whether they would actually be able to get his signature on the dotted line, because it's a very different project at this point versus where what he was tasked with charging when the club was first starting and he initially came. But that would certainly provide a jolt. But honestly, any coach would provide more of a jolt than it would have if Ronny Dyla comes back. Not all his fault, I would say. The players underperformed as well. They're the ones who are out there who ultimately have to perform. But a lot of work for Atlanta United to do, obviously, this offseason to get themselves back to where they believe they should be. And that was underscored by Arthur Blank's statement to supporters last week.
Joe, appreciate it. As always, we'll chat next week.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
All right. That is our own insider there, Joe Patrick. An unfortunate segue for Atlanta United coverage there. As, again, if you missed it tonight, Garth Lagerwey, the club did announce that he unfortunately has to step away once again to focus on his health for an indefinite period of time. And Chris Henderson and his staff will lead the charge and lead the search now for a new manager as well. And if you want more in-depth coverage of that, a couple of things you can do. I did have an interview with our buddy Jason Longshore. You can go download that on the Off the Woodwork podcast or the Chris Thomas Tonight page, or you can just stick right here because Jason will be coming up at the top of the hour with Mike Conte, Madison Cruz chipping in with the coverage as well. So much to get into with the five stripes. Brad Guzan hangs it up. The search for the new manager is underway. And now, of course, the news coming down just about an hour ago that Garth Lagerwey once again does need to step away to focus on his health. All right, to wrap up the show when we get back, I didn't get to it before because I took so many of your calls. It was so much fun talking Falcons and Penix with you all night long here on 92.9 The Game. But we got a producer six-pack with Big O to wrap up the show on a Tuesday here on 92.9 The Game. Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Been a busy, busy show. We talked Falcons and Michael Penix Jr. We took a ton of your calls. Appreciate everybody who checked in at 404-726-0929. We got to chat Hawks with Caleb Johnson and new Hawks guard Keaton Wallace. If you missed any of that, go online and search Chris Thomas Tonight wherever you get your podcast. We talked some college football, UGA, Georgia Tech, who's going to be the new coach at Florida. It was a busy, busy Tuesday show with y'all. And the coverage of Atlanta United, of course, again, like I said before the break, we'll continue with Jason Longshore, Madison Cruz, and Mike Conte on what should be a very interesting edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight, as along with the managerial search, along with restructuring the roster, along with getting everything ready for the World Cup, it was also announced today that Garth Lagerwey had to step away once again to focus on his health. So a lot going on with the five stripes. And oh yeah, Brad Guzan, the team will now have a new goaltender for the first time in a while, and everything Brad means to the club and to the franchise. And that's going to be discussed as well. So a jam-packed Atlanta Soccer Tonight coming your way in just a couple of minutes. But before Oren and I get out of Dodge here, we got to do a producer six-pack.
All right, I had papers covering up my mic button there. Good evening, Chris. We haven't talked a whole lot tonight.
Get out of my brain. That's literally what I was just about to say. Oren, it's been such a jam-packed show that I've barely gotten to get your input on damn near anything tonight.
I've done more talking to people on the phone tonight than I have Chris. And it's one of those days.
You know what, Oren? That's a good for the goose, good for the gander situation.
I'll take that.
So
I'll take
the passionate Falcons fans and the passionate calls. We will always hear from the peeps here on Chris Thomas Tonight. But now, Big O, to close out the show, we hear from you.
All right. So I asked you this in the wild card round. I asked you this in the divisional round. I'm asking you this again right now. So we've gone all the rounds here in Major League Baseball. Dodgers or Blue Jays winning the World Series, which one you got?
You know where I'm going.
I had a feeling that answer wasn't changing.
You know where I'm going. I'm a full proponent of, and Oren, you'll know this also from my Kansas City Chiefs take, which is looking mwah right now, by the way.
They are surging right now, man, both in team play and Patrick Mahomes surging up that MVP race right now, too.
I told you over and over again, every time you ask me about the Chiefs,
I say, gotta beat them. Beat the man, gotta beat the man.
Exactly, and that's what it is about the Dodgers. We didn't even, because of when it happened, we didn't really get a chance to talk about what Ohtani did, man.
That was insane.
The most impressive single baseball performance probably
ever
in the history of the game.
Ever.
In a game that's been played since the 1800s.
You almost had to do a double take of that stat line. Like, that's not real. That's not real what he did from the mound. That's not real what he did from the plate. Oh, and he did that both in the same. Those by themselves would just be great games individually. But you combine them and in a clinching and a game clinching effort, in a series clincher, that's what he did.
It's amazing. I mean, it really is.
Struggling no more, I think, for Mr. Shohei right now.
No, because he was like 2-for-20 before, like going into the end of that series. But yeah, one of the 6 innings pitched, 10 strikeouts, no earned runs, and 3 home runs in the same game.
You just throw in the 3 home runs just for extra measure.
It doesn't.
The 10 strikeouts wasn't bad. You know, it wasn't horrible. It was good enough.
It doesn't even sound real.
No, it doesn't.
Literally the only other player to ever do something like that was Babe Ruth.
Babe.
That's it.
Babe, George Herman.
That's your company.
Yes.
And that was
Babe, Shohei, end of list.
And that was 100 years ago with segregation. So that was before Jackie Robinson and before everybody else in the league. So
when baseball was literally black and white.
Yeah, well put, exactly.
You had Babe, you had Shohei, and no one else.
It's unreal.
No
so,
one else.
So, yeah, I'm going Dodger. I think I like this Blue Jays team. They're spunky. They got some star power with Vladdy Jr. We'll see if Bichette can go. But, Oren, Dodgers going back-to-back for the first time since the New York Yankees in 1999 and 2000.
Them dudes. Question number 2. Got 2 quarterbacks here. They happen to be from the same state. And they played high school football against each other. That would be Dylan Gabriel and Tua out there in Hawaii. They both played high school games against each other. They both have the distinction right now.
Tua feels like he's been in the league for...
Well, Dylan was in college for like 6 years.
Yeah, that's true. Wow,
he was in college forever.
That's crazy. Yeah, I guess you're right.
So, they both have the distinction right now of being the starting quarterbacks on 2 of the worst teams in the NFL, although Cleveland did get a big win over the weekend, but doesn't mean a whole lot. Dylan or Tua, which one of those quarterbacks gets benched first?
Benched?
Benched.
See, I don't think they're going to bench Tua.
You don't think so?
No.
It's all the talk right now about the backup quarterback race or the backup quarterback position that Mike McDaniel's doing right now.
I believe it's Quinn Ewers for the moment.
And then Mike talked about in his press game conference over the weekend after a loss to the Cleveland Browns about how guys who were actively doing things to not help this team win ball games,
and then
there's going to be some evaluation.
And then he had to retract it. I mean, come on, man.
Word of the season right now for Miami, retraction.
Here's my hot take for this question, Oren. Both quarterbacks finish out the season.
Both of them do?
Yeah, because you're not going to Shadur, not happening, after the circus. And you're not, and Tua makes $50 million. You got to dance with the girl that brung you there. I actually think, you want another hot take?
Go ahead.
Miami does not make a move until the offseason.
For both coach and quarterback or just in
and
general?
And GM. I think all 3 are gone next year.
So I keep reading, though, because of Stephen Ross, how big of a fan he is of Mr. Greer down there. Greer might not get fired. He might just get reassigned.
You know that he's been there for a decade?
Yeah, see, there you go.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and they haven't been great for the past decade either.
I believe 1 playoff appearance.
So a guy like that who has managed to sort of keep his job, keep his position after 10 years of both mediocrity and below average play from the team that he is constructing every year. Yeah, just I got a feeling that he's not going to get, like, his next job is not going to be it's not going to be GM, I don't think, but it won't be outside of the Miami Dolphins organization.
Well, who would hire him? Why?
That's also
Why
true.
Would you hire him?
Why would you hire him?
And I hate to say it, got a guy in our backyard kind of in a similar boat.
Yep.
Similar boat. That's why we had this Michael Penix conversation tonight.
Indeed, we did.
Because Michael Penix needs to be on the same track as the Falcons, and right now...
He better be better.
Yeah, he better be. B-U-T-T.
He better be better.
B-E-T-T-U-H. Better be. All right.
All right, questions 3 and 4. I've got two quarterbacks here. Now, you talked with Jody Leon, and he mentioned the Heisman race and how... Ty Simpson right now is kind of off and running with this thing, but it's still, you know, still not exactly a true lead horse right now in the race. So I got Diego Pavia, sir. The percent chance out of 100 that he is a Heisman finalist.
Finalist?
Finalist. You don't have to win it, but just being a finalist.
25-30%, I'd say.
Okay.
And it's because he plays for Vandy. I hate to say it.
Yeah, but I would think, though, maybe just because of where Vandy is at the moment, maybe that gives them some sort of like, oh, wow, because it is Vandy and traditionally they are in a spot that they've never been in before where they are both like, inside of like the top or they're a top 10 football team and they also have a quarterback who could be a Heisman finalist. So
here's the problem. I think they lose at home this weekend in Mizzou.
You think so?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I like Mizzou in that one kind of
okay.
big. And okay. I think that'll squash any the guy for me that I mentioned to Joe is and listen, he's really good, but nobody knows about him is Fernando Mendoza.
Fernando is tearing
he's
it up right now in Indiana.
Insane right now for Indiana. It's just coming into the season, nobody knew who he was.
Again, he was transferred from Cal. Funny thing about Fernando, you know who he picked Indiana over?
No.
Georgia.
Really?
Yes.
That's a great
Kirby pined hard for Fernando,
wow.
buddy. Pined hard for
well,
him.
You know what, though? I hate to say it. He made the right choice because the line, the deli line where you grab your ticket and you got to wait in line is a lot longer at Georgia than it is at Indiana.
Yeah, Kirby was looking to shore up that depth. And not to say that Fernando wouldn't have gotten, he's showing right now that he's good enough not just to play, but he's shooting up draft boards too. But, yeah, Indiana and Georgia, there was one of the school too, but I believe Georgia was the team Indiana beat out.
Speaking of Georgia quarterbacks, were you surprised that Joe said that he'd put Gunner in the Heisman consideration?
No, because Gunner's had some moments this year that have stood out. The Tennessee game, being able to lead Georgia back, and having that throw late to London Humphreys, and then what he did in the Ole Miss game. Let's go back a week. What you were able to do in that Auburn game, running the football, and keeping that Georgia team in that football game, and then this week. He started off his first, 12 for 12 in that game or something. Like, just insane stats. And then you find out earlier in the week he missed practice Monday and Tuesday because of an oblique injury. And the plan was for him to not be running as much. And Gunner was like, no, we run. I run. We, that's success right there. Like, that's how we have successful plays. Like, I'm not going to limit our offense just because of that. Like, no, if I'm out there, the full complement of plays that you call, I'm going to run. And sure enough, you saw what he did passing the football. You saw what he did running the football. So
it would be fascinating if Simpson and Gunner are 1 and 2 in the Heisman, and then they face off again in the SEC
championship. And that's the thing, too, about playing in the SEC. I'm going to knock out the conferences here. It's high-profile games, so to speak, with national-type audiences every week.
Every week,
out.
Yeah.
So Georgia, like, Florida's not, Florida's not having a great season. That'll be a 3:30 game.
Yeah.
Texas not having a great year, but that'll be a 3:30 game.
Sure will.
Oh, and then, by the way, you're going to have that affair on that Friday night, all to yourself Black Friday, against Georgia Tech, who could be undefeated. So the stage sets up very, very well for for Gunner to close out the season. Like, if he has successful games closing out this season, he could very well kind of thrust himself in the Heisman race. It's kind of like what Stetson did. Like, Stetson was sort of like this unknown type of dude, and then he played extremely well, like, the last half of the season his senior year, and then all of a sudden he ends up in New York and is a finalist in New York.
All right, let's finish this up. Producer Six-Pack to close up the show. Chris Thomas tonight. Again, stay tuned for coverage of Atlanta United with the breaking news on Garth Lagerwey and he having to step away with Jason Longshore, Mike Conti, and Madison Cruz.
Tonight, the re-debut, if you will, of the NBA on Peacock or NBA on NBC. It was so cool seeing the Peacock come out, the holograms, the lasers, and they had the iconic sort of intro voice. You didn't have Bob Costas doing the intro, but that's okay. I can live without that. But that theme, Round Ball Rock, is iconic. That is my most iconic sports theme. What is your most iconic sports theme, sir?
I think it's March Madness.
Okay.
I think of that first day. Yeah. I think of that first day. And just being my brain just exploding from all the basketball and hearing that theme over and over and over. It's like a season's worth of theme in an afternoon, and it just sticks. Monday Night Football is probably second. Those are probably my top two.
Okay. And last one, sir, here. Weekend plan, sir. What you got going on?
That's right. The ultimate question every single week. I don't know. Last weekend we were in Helen. That was so much fun. We went for Oktoberfest, the girlfriend and her brother and one of our friends. That was a great time. I haven't decided yet. I got a show on Saturday. I got the flyover on Sunday. But in between, you know what I might do, Warren? I have not seen a movie in a long time.
You haven't gone to see him yet, have you?
I decided
not to do him.
I'm just going to wait. I'm going to wait until it comes out on video.
That's safe.
And there's a lot of good movies out. So I think I'm going to go to the movies this weekend, Orin. And it's going to be beautiful out, so hopefully spend some time outside as well. All right, great job. Oh, great. Thanks to all my guests. Specifically, thanks to everybody who called in. We had a great discussion tonight on the Atlanta Falcons and Michael Penix Jr. and the timeline. It's not matching up right now, folks. How concerned are you? We'll continue to break this down throughout the week. Thanks to Keaton Wallace of the Hawks for stopping by. He has a really cool story. Go check that out at CT Tonight 929 or at C Thomas Radio. Podcast link is posted right there for you. Again, Mike Conti, Jason Longshore, Madison Cruz coming up for a special edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Manager talk, Garth Lagerwey update, and what's going on with the goalie situation as they'll have to replace Brad Guzan, who decided to hang it up. So don't go anywhere, Five Stripe fans and Atlanta sports fans. That's coming up next. This has been Chris Thomas Tonight on 92.9 The Game.
Night, 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 night,